contract when 66 is done or something like that?
Not too much. It was all done within the mini staff. We didn't really ask anybody else for that.
That one you wanted to throw at them, not.
The only one that there was this extensive amount to going out to the fleet with was that Zephyr just had.
And now the other specific things I wanted to ask, while we're on this, before we get into the general business of the whole Z-Gram business, was why was it so long before the ones on drugs and alcohol and women, what was...
Ones on drugs...
Well, the drugs was fairly soon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was...
Drugs was 94. Well, that was a year.
Yeah, but you see, the Navy really wasn't involved in a real big drug situation until it started building up around 71.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
It wasn't happening in Vietnam when you were there?
No, sir. To my knowledge, there was no hard drug usage by anybody in the Navy or anywhere else in Vietnam up until sometime in the early 70s. And I'm unaware of any hard drug usage in the Navy until maybe it just started around October of 70. And
did it start in Vietnam or in this country?
No, in Vietnam. In around the fall of 70, just almost overnight, there came onto the market in Vietnam through the maids and through the taxi drivers and the pedicab drivers and so forth, a little nice clean plastic container that had something heroin in it that was something over 90% pure. You couldn't even shoot it. You'd get an overdose if you shoot it. The guys were sniffing it or powdering it into cigarettes and smoking. That didn't happen till the fall of 70. And there was not there was a mounting drug usage in the Navy worldwide, but it wasn't significant. And then when that hit over there, we finally started hearing about it in the Navy something around April. And in April, we sent a team over there to kind of look the situation over. Admiral Zumwalt was over there in May. By then, the Army and the Air Force had come up with what they called the amnesty program. And Admiral Zumwalt had asked us to kick around what kind of amnesty program we were coming up with and staffing that. And it did get an awful lot of careful staffing through the Judge Advocate General and through my office and through the Naval Investigative Service. And,
the amnesty program.
Yes, sir. And we were working on this, and he was in Vietnam on one of his trips as CNO over there in May of 71. And Admiral Salzer was then had his old job, commander of the Naval Forces, and he was telling me about the drug problem. Of course, we already had started to work on some kind of education stuff that we could send back over there, and Admiral Salzer had already taken, he had teams formed up that were going out with educational programs and so forth. But he said, we need some sort of amnesty program over there. And so Admiral Zumwalt, right on the spot, said, okay, you have a pilot program for the next 30 days. Give amnesty to anybody that's on drugs and ask for help. Go ahead and take care of them without, let it be known that they will not be prosecuted and this sort of thing. Just do it. And so that was the Navy's first program. The staffing of the program had gone to the degree that I think we had out the Navy exemption program prior to the time that month was up. I think it was June or July. We finally got the exemption program.
The Z-gram was July 15th. Which means that it had been drafted probably 2 or 3 weeks before that, the actual message itself.
That's right. And I think that it was close enough. As I recall, I was a liaison with Vietnam at the time. I recall calling them and saying, don't stop what your amnesty program, it'll be absorbed by the exemption program that's on the way. So that was the timing on that. Now, nobody was ever concerned about alcoholics before. And one of the things that that you learned early on when you started talking about drug abuse and control of drug abuse is that you were talking out both sides of your mouth if you weren't also going to do something about the alcoholics, which is a bigger problem in the Navy and is a bigger problem in most
in
industries
the world,
and in the world. And it turned out that about the time we were gearing up our drug education shop and trying to put together an organization to control for drug rehabilitation and so forth, there appeared on the scene a Captain Baxter, who was a recovered alcoholic, who had known of a small alcohol rehabilitation effort that was going on out at Long Beach, kind of a bootstrap operation under the aegis of BUMED, and that had been going on for a couple of years. It had been set up by a Dr. Zuska, who was a Navy medical officer who retired as a captain. His brother and sister-in-law, or sister and brother-in-law, through some sort of involvement with alcoholism, both lost their lives, and he became a zealot in alcohol rehabilitation, convinced the BUMED to give him a wing of a place to operate and so forth. And he, working with AA and all kinds of experimentation, put together a little rehab program out there. This Captain Baxter was aware of that. He actually had made his recovery on his own, working through AA with the help of somebody else that had gotten him involved. And so he came to us, and about time we were starting to think, well, we've got to have to do something about this alcohol problem too. And finally he started working for me, and we then started to put together what was the Navy's alcohol program, which is probably now as good as any to find in the world.
Did this also come up in a corollary way when you were looking into the whole problem of family, Navy family life? I think it might surface through that, too.
Not really. Where it came up really was twofold. Because of the drug thing, it was obvious to all the services that they had to also look at alcohol. Senator Hughes also was very interested in the military getting both a drug rehabilitation capability and an alcohol rehabilitation capability, since Senator Hughes is himself recovered alcohol. So it was really through trying to expand the drug program and the fortune of the Navy's having had a couple of years in a small thing that we were able to build on.
Has the Navy been the service pioneer in alcohol programs?
The Air Force would not let you get by with saying that, but if you talk to the nation's leaders in the alcoholism and alcohol abuse area, you'll find that the Navy is considered to be one of the pioneers. And we have one of the most extensive programs there is right now. Now, you know, there was no sweat at all with Admiral Zumwalt seeing the wisdom of this and supporting it. But it's not a thing that was particularly
on
his mind till it was pointed out that the necessity to take this one too. Of course, it's the kind of thing that he's very supportive of, and he gets more than supportive once he finds out this is the direction we should go. Then he becomes the pusher.
Well, now about the whole. I realize also that, you know, in spite of the fact that 57 and 66 and those are the famous Z-grams, that there are other ones that are much more to the point as far as at least the retention program was concerned.
Right. Could I talk to you a little bit about how a lot of these, where the ideas came from? Get that all?
Do you know about
the retention study groups that he had?
Well, I'd rather you talk first about maybe it's talking about the same thing, about how the whole operation worked, kind of the Z-gram operation worked. Where the ideas came from, what the procedures for putting them out, what the criteria for making something a Z-gram was, what the ones that the office thought of as most important were, and how they got publicized, and, you know, how did they get into the press? Did you actually put out releases about them, or did they creep into the press, or, you know, all that kind of stuff?
Okay.
The whole thing.
He came into the job with a list of things that he had put together that he wanted to do based on his previous command experience and based on what he saw in Vietnam. And he had asked for some suggestions before he left Vietnam, too, on some things that might be looked at.
Yeah.
So Captain Tidd, who was his chief of staff, had been relieved, and he came back they made an inspection tour of the fleets on the way back to Washington from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a round-the-world trip, almost. And and so he kind of arrived in the city with a list of things that he wanted to do. Now, one of the things that I think he kind of picked up, well, let me say another thing. There was also a young officer who had worked for us in Vietnam, a fine young man who was a good friend of his son's, Elmo, but that's just incidental. Name of Dave Halperin, whom you may want to get together with.
He's the guy who finally got on Kissing Her Stay.
Right. Dave was also on that trip when they came back. And he talked to the young people, and he talked to the commanding officers of small units while the Admiral was talking to fleet commanders and stuff like that. And the Admiral talked to him and the Captain, and together they put together some ideas of some things that they wanted to do. Now, one of these was the chicken regulations thing.
Yeah, right.
In fact, the first time I saw Admiral Zumwalt after he got back, I remember riding with him somewhere, and he says, check one of the things that I want to put out. I don't know what it's going to be in it exactly, but I know the title of it. It's going to be Mickey Mouse, comma, Elimination of. And
too bad it didn't go out as that.
Well, you'll see all that lore in that
folder.
Is that
folder. The staff then? Yeah.
Because it was like that, and then it got changed.
Yeah.
And at the very last minute, it got the Mickey Mouse got left out.
Mm-hmm.
And The other thing that he wanted early on...
Well, Mickey Mouse is in the text, though.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is. The other thing that he wanted was early on, and this is not of much significance as it turns out, but was a letter to all commanding officers on the subject of command. And another thing that he wanted to do was call in small groups representatives of various communities, have them brainstorm for about a week under the direction of Lieutenant Halperin, Dave Halperin, and then at the end of the week present to him and later to the Secretary of the Navy also, but at first it was just to him, and then the Secretary started different ways again. Some of their ideas on essentially how the Navy could be improved. The first one was junior officers, I believe, from the surface community, and the second one was junior officers, I believe, either from the submarine or air community, and the next was the other. Somewhere in there, it seemed like a good idea, because of some of the things we had heard in some of the early ones, to bring the wives back, too. As a matter of fact, I think air was second, and then the third was submarines, because I remember the submarine wives came when the submariners came. And then, early on, we said, well, we better also talk to some of the enlisted people. And then, out of these ideas, then Captain Tibb would take, he was the management guy, taking the notes, making sure nothing falls through the crack. Then, Admiral Zumwalt would sit down with Lieutenant Halperin, and sometimes I was there, sometimes I wasn't, sometimes Captain Tibb was there. And he'd say, well, this idea I don't think we can do without further staffing. Let's do this one right now. Let's do this one right now. Here's one that's going to have a law passed. But let's go ahead and tell somebody to start initiating legislation.
It'll be all right.
Yeah. Here's nothing we could do right now. And so forth. And then with that, we would write up action to the appropriate action action sheets to the appropriate office, which got to be known as Green Stripes, because Admiral Tidd always used to write, or Captain Tidd always used to write everything in green. And so when he made up the forms that these went out on, he had them bordered in green. So these would go out to the appropriate place. Generally, it was the chief naval personnel.
Yeah, it was generally personnel. I noticed by the drafting, most of them were drafted personnel.
Right. But these things that came about as a result of these retention study groups sometimes had involvement by the SPLY people, sometimes even by the Navy Materiel Command, outside of supply.
This procedure is what accounts for the rather random order of how they came out.
Precisely. Yeah. Precisely. Now, he wanted them pretty well balanced. He didn't want everything just all goody-goody stuff, you know. He went to some operational fun and zest type of thing, which you'll see. That's just the...
Gather, he also wanted things that applied to all ranks and ratings, and not just...
That's right. He's very conscious of that very early on.
Yeah.
Although a lot of people criticized that it was mostly for the young people. Very early on, we were looking to see how much really is just for the young people and how much is for everybody, because most of them really were for everybody. The majority were.
A lot of them were directed specifically to, several were directed specifically to chiefs or to...
That's right. That's right.
Senior officers.
That's right. Now, So then the office that had the primary responsibility for that particular area would come back with a program and with a message to send out. Now, I think before he finally took over CNO, he got the idea one day that I think these are general messages that go out to all Navy operations people. And so essentially, it's the whole Navy. And it's called a NAVOP for short. And NAVOPs, like all general messages, have a serial number to them, starting at the first of each year. First of each fiscal year, they start with number one and they get number. He said, I think so that everybody knows that I've
half a dozen of them go out a day.
NAVOPs?
Yeah.
It's a large number. It's a large number. I didn't know. But he said, I think that so people will know I'm personally concerned about some of these things that go out, because there are lots that go out from the big staff. I think I'll just put a Z number on some of them. And I remember there was a person or two that recommended against it. I don't know why. But he finally said, I think I'll do it anyway. And so he had decided to do that early on, just for that reason, so that the fleet would know what the CNO himself was personally interested in versus the standard staffed thing that comes out to the fleet. And he originally had not necessarily intended that they be all personnel oriented, but as a matter of fact, the second one had something, it was confidential, and it had something to do with the way people treat publications or something like that.
Yeah.
But from then on, or they all were, because somewhere early on, the press got awfully interested in this. And I don't know the answer to your question as to whether the press just got interested or whether Jack Davy brought the press in. Probably the latter. Probably Commander Davy, now Captain Davy, probably tried to push these. I don't know. But
think so. It's pretty hard for a press to find out about the NAVOPs.
But when he started letting people know about that, then the press perked up a little bit on what it was, the kind of thing he was saying. And so then the decision was made that it would be best to keep them all personnel oriented. And all unclassified.
Yeah.
Now, there was another one that...
It was another confidential one. I forgot what
it
was.
Yeah, it's around 52 or so, which is one I wrote that was going to set up a system where you could write to a classified thing to all commanding officers, commanders, officers in charge, and this sort of thing, so that he'd have a communication with the people in command by Z-gram effort. But we never used it, because Davy's advice was that they should all be out in the open, and the only way I was going to use this was that we'd do it on a confidential basis. So the skipper, you know, could be informed of something, or the CNO could talk to the skipper without the whole world below him and everybody else knowing about it. But it was not used.
Yeah, it was a cryptography one.
That's the number two.
The number two.
Right. Then there's one. There may have been one towards the end.
There was one toward the end that was addressed to various high-ranking folk.
That's pretty much in general what happened. And then, like I say, when the mini staff would get them, and mostly they come to my office, and then I would shotgun them out to all those other people
and
get their
comments. The subjects could originate either from the retention study groups, right?
Subjects originated from Admiral Sumwalt's own ideas, from somebody that was close to him, or from the retention study groups, which was the biggest group of them.
The greatest number came from that.
Right. And maybe the next greatest number, and I'm not sure about this, but no, probably not. But another source was his visits to the fleet.
His visits to the fleet. Well, that's really well, give me what people told him when he...
Right. You know, whenever he went out to visit any area, he had always arranged to talk to various levels of people. He always talked to the command. He always talked to the wardrooms. He'd always talk to groups of chiefs, and he'd always talk to a large group of junior enlisted people, and try and find out what was on their mind, how things were going, and so forth. And every now and then...
Is he able to get people like junior enlisted people to open up to him and tell him what they think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They aren't scared of him.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, just pour it out. And even in a large group.
They will.
And so, generally, somebody from Captain Tidd's office was with him whenever he would go on one of these trips.
Making notes.
And every time a good idea would get written down, he'd say, good idea, we'll look into that. They'd write it down. And then go out and issue an action sheet on the thing. And then we'd get it staffed and looked at. And if he agreed with it, then he'd send it on to Zika. But I can't tell you which ones originated in which directions. I know some of them that originated through our shop. But
well, now were some of the important ones on his mind when he first sat in the chair? For example, I guess standards of service was an important one by everybody's.
That's a 30-something. Yes.
I mean, you all regarded that as one of the critical ones.
As a matter of fact,
he drafted that himself, and it says so on the thing.
He may have changed it. He didn't draft it. The guy that drafted that standards of service was up 30-something, wasn't it?
I don't remember what number.
But it was early.
Yeah.
Was a captain or commander in Bucharest. Who later came back as executive assistant to Chief Naval Personnel. He's the guy that did the original draft. Now, by the time it changed him around.
Well, there are a few that carry his name as drafter. Did he ever actually draft them? The Equal Rights one carries his name as the drafter.
No, he didn't draft.
Okay. That's just for. Well, why is his name?
I don't know why we did it. To protect the innocent, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I don't mean the innocent, but to,
yeah, no,
to protect the drafter. Because you know, that message goes out electrically to the fleet without any of that information on it. But the way the message goes out to the staff in Washington is they just duplicate the thing that was sent to sent in to be sent out, and so it's got on it who the drafter. Well, the thing you've seen goes out to everybody in the Washington area. That's the way they get their copy. So, or at least in the Pentagon.
There are some subjects that are sensitive enough so that you don't want to get some lieutenant commander in Dutch over. Right.
Let's talk about the Equatuni area, if you don't mind.
Sure.
He's probably already told you about that a little bit.
We haven't got really to that yet at all. We've only had a few hours together, all together so far.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the motivation is, but, well, yes.
Can I ask you to do something?
Sure.
You can always say you can't do it, I won't do it. Can you say candidly, since this is only amongst us three, really what this Navy scene is in regard to
well, all kinds of starchiness and, but you know, discrimination, racial bias, the prerogatives of a captain, the whole. I was an enlisted man.